Justin.
And this month we're going to be talking about found footage films.
That was your theme you picked, right?
It's a good one. I'm just going to say, I feel like there's a running overall theme going through most of the things that I've chosen this year. We started off with true crime. We've gotten to found footage, and, you know, spoiler alert, we might be doing documentaries later this year, because I don't know, I just keep going for real things. There's something about being
real,
a real story, that, you know, it adds some stakes to things. But yeah, I think we have a good group of found footage films we'll be talking about. I don't think we didn't pick any of the, what I think are the ones that everyone thinks of when you immediately say found footage films.
The Blair Witch Project, Cloverfield.
Paranormal Activity.
I didn't like that movie. That'd be rough to have to go through again.
Those are the three. I don't like Blair Witch Project either. I think it's very overrated.
I don't think it's overrated for the time. That's just me.
I don't know. I don't want to say it never scared me, because we've discussed in the past that there's not, we don't have a ton of films that we're like, I was so scared. But I don't know, even watching it when it first came out, I was just like, okay. It was an okay movie, I guess. I think it's because I didn't think it was real even from the beginning. Like, there was something in my mind, like, I'm a very skeptical person to begin with. I don't believe.
I didn't think it was real either. The first time I watched that movie, they already said that it wasn't real, but just the way MTV was the one that really seemed to be pushing that movie, I just didn't believe that it was. The best part of the Blair Witch Project is literally the last minute of the movie. That's the movie. That really is the entire movie. You can say whatever you want about it. I didn't personally make it, so I don't have any stakes against it.
I feel like, too, it was a weird, the way it was, and I don't know, just the way it was presented, too, when it came out, and then all the hype that has surrounded it going forward since its release. Like, you'd almost think that was the first found footage film ever made, when it's very clearly not. They go back, I mean, I don't know, maybe the earliest one that I can think of or really know of would be the all the different cannibal films that came out of Italy, like Cannibal Holocaust, Cannibal Ferox. Like, all those movies are all, you know, found footage films. So it's like the genre in itself, and the film we're talking about today predates Blair Witch by like 7 years, I think. So it just always gets put up there as like, this is the movie that really started it all. And I'm like, but not really. I think it was just the most popular at the time. It's the one that, it was the first Hollywood one, maybe, because I don't know, because this, the film we're talking about today, Man Bites Dog, is a Belgian film, and the other ones, like I said, were Italian, so it was a foreign idea to begin with, I guess.
I think what maybe makes Blair Witch stand out more than the older films is now we're in the world of marketing, and it was highly marketed to everybody, and people were talking about this movie as if it was real. I was skeptical too, but you had a lot of word of mouth on top of the fact that
it's better marketing. But even Cannibal Holocaust was kind of, in a way, marketed to be real. Like, the director of that film, I know he paid his actors and he told them, like, don't appear in any films after you've done this. Like, go into hiding. And then that was a whole thing where he got sued and he had to get the actors to come into court to basically say, yeah, we weren't actually killed. Like, it's a movie. But he was the first one to.
What if he couldn't find the actors?
Yeah, what if they actually did die, like, somewhere else? Yeah. I mean, he'd be in prison, I guess. But, again, that's where I kind of go back to, it gets brought up that, oh, well, the marketing, that it was so real. And I'm like, but somebody else already even did that. Like, that was his whole thing, was trying to convince the world that this thing was truly a real film of, you know, cannibals in the Amazons that killed people. Like I said, to go so far as to tell his actors not to appear in other movies immediately after the release. Like, basically go take a vacation for a year and we're going to pretend like you all died. So even its own marketing campaign still isn't really original. It just went further because the internet was getting big at the time of its release. So
let's produce a real found footage film. Let's find a real one.
Let's just find some footage. Let's just go out there and find some footage.
Like Indiana Jones. I'm just looking for a found footage film that's real.
Yeah. Let's just go find some footage. But yeah, like I said, this week we're talking about the Belgian film Man Bites Dog, which it's the French or Belgian translation is It Happened in Your Neighborhood, which is also a weird, they're both weird titles for the film. And yeah, it's an interesting one. It's, you know, I'll give it a plug since we always do. It is on the Criterion Collection.
And the Criterion Channel.
Yeah, that's where I first, it's on HBO Max too. That's where I watched it, even though I do own it. But
and probably Canopy.
And I think they, and it, yeah. So it's out there. It's not hard to find. But that's where I first saw it, was buying the Criterion, because I think it was going out of print a long time ago. I think it's back in print now, but it was one of those ones that was going out years ago when they would like really hype up, hey, these movies are going out of print, you might want to buy them, and get people to buy the DVD copies, that now they've released a lot of those back on 4K and Blu-ray.
Right. Peeping Tom, that must have been the same time, and that's coming back. That's getting a 4K in May.
That's where I bought my copy of that, too. Yeah, same thing. So, yeah, this is a film about a small group of filmmakers who find a guy who's... It's never established how they found him, if it was in, like, an ad or something like that they put out for looking for people, or they just stumbled across him, but... Their main star of their film that they're making is a serial killer who, I don't even know if you'd call him a serial killer, because he doesn't have any real, doesn't seemingly have any motives for these murders, and he doesn't follow any sort of pattern. He is
a serial killer, though.
That's how most people would describe him, but he doesn't necessarily fit the pattern.
Not completely, but he does shoot people, multiple people, more than three of the same way as a serial killer. So even if he does kill a few a completely weird ass way, I would say it counts.
Yeah. Yeah, Benoit, their protagonist. Who leads a life of this is how he makes his money, is killing people to get their... He says he especially likes killing old people because then he can get their checks and cash in like their social security checks, and they usually always have money like stashed around their house. You know, as he tells us, he doesn't like killing kids. It gets messy. That's a problem for
him. He does shoot two kids in it with a toy gun, but he does. Well, they do kill a kid, so...
He does have to kill that one kid. Yeah, he does have very, very different ways for everybody. A lot of shooting, but one of my favorites is when he scares the old woman to death, and he's just like, I saw she had heart medication on her table. I figured I could probably just give her a heart attack.
Save a bullet,
yeah. Makes a lot less of a mess.
I remember seeing this cover, but I was thinking that it was a French New Wave film, and it does still kind of have that feel to it, but I didn't know that it was a found footage film at all, and I would certainly say, minus one scene, it's pretty much a comedy. It reminds me a lot of Borat. That's what I kept thinking of the entire time I was watching it. It just felt like a Borat thing, where he just, every thought that he has just comes out of his mouth. He has an opinion on everything. He wants to share all this information that he has. Little scenes where he's like, this is so-and-so's bed, and look, there's a light here, and it just reminds me of something straight out of that movie. So I wouldn't be surprised if it influenced them somehow. And then I read that this was at Cannes, I think that was the festival, in 1992, And that's where Quentin Tarantino and Steve Buscemi saw it. Steve Buscemi says it's one of his top 10 movies. And Tarantino, there was some story about him punching a guy to try to get the back in to see it a second time.
He got into a fight with a security guard or something trying to get into the second showing. Because he said he was just like, he was just so excited to see the film. He was all jacked up and was like, I gotta see this movie. You gotta let me in. So yeah, it has an effect on people.
They said it inspired Natural Born Killers, which I would say that this is way better than Natural Born Killers.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I guess it would have been the idea, I guess, in general, you know, of the idea of, like, the media, like, how much he's being influenced, like, you know, would he necessarily even commit all these crimes or be doing it as often if he didn't have a film crew? Because he's definitely showing off for them, And then at some point he does get in there where he needs them to like help him in the middle of crimes, especially when he after he gets punched in the boxing ring and breaks his neck and can't do anything for himself. Which I don't like, you're saying about how there's so much comedy in that film. I do love that scene of the guy just like drops him with one punch and he's just laying on the floor, and that gym manager's just like, I told him he hasn't been practicing often enough. That he just has the neck brace that he can't dump bodies, which we see him do that multiple times. He's always taking bodies to the quarry and dumping them in.
And those scenes are really funny. The first one where he's not at the rock quarry, but the one where he's next to the train. I just imagine
it's like too shallow and it just like lands there.
Oh yeah, because the scene before that is him explaining how you have to weigh down the body so it doesn't float, and then he throws it in the shallowest water and it just sits there. But when that train passes by, my thought is the conductor of that train, I wonder if he knows that this is a movie, because he literally just went past somebody that's dumping a body-shaped body bag essentially over the bridge.
Yeah, he tries that. Then from that point on, he always has to go to the quarry to keep dumping them, which then leads to a great scene after, at the point when he does break his neck and he's having trouble, when he goes to dump the bodies and just looks down and they've drained the entire quarry, and you just see like just piles of bodies and skeletons lying on the bottom, and he's just like, I think we have a problem.
I think I'm tricked too, because they made it in 99, or it was released in, or sorry, 92 is when it came out. And it feels, even though you can see that the cars are modern, it feels like it's supposed to be a 60s or the 50s or something. It really does just feel like a French New Wave film when I'm watching it. So it just keeps throwing me off, and I think it's older. And then I keep seeing these violent images of, like, it is pretty graphic. It feels really graphic, at least.
Yeah, it feels like it would. It could 100% just be like right in there with a Godard movie or something like that. Like oh yeah, he did a Band of Outsiders, and then, you know, Man Bites Dog, and then followed it up. Like, yeah, it has that great, the black and white cinematography is great. I'm sure they filmed it that way probably because it was cheaper, and also probably helps with, you know, the effects that might not have been all great looking. It hides the fact that maybe they couldn't get the color of the blood right or something like that, but it looks great. Pretty much no score to it, just whatever music you hear in the background. But the main character is just such a bizarre guy. Like you're saying, he has an opinion on everything, and he's such like he is like very much a perfectionist. Like, he plays the music with the girl that he said he went to school with, and he's like correcting her every like, you're not playing it like that. You're playing too high. And then he's like, how am I playing it? Oh, you're playing it like that. Yeah, exactly. Are you playing it like that? Like, he seems like, and he does really seem like any little thing could just set him off.
You keep meeting his family too. They go to the family store, and then it feels like they know that he is a killer and they're totally okay with it. Like, they're in the know.
That was one of the things I read that I didn't know before. That is his actual family. And they said when they were filming, they thought that they were just making a movie about, like, their son. They thought people were just, like, that they just wanted to film him. So they said, like, pretty much, I guess, like, most of that is just them being like, our son's such a nice boy. Like, he's just a great guy. Like, they didn't know what the film actually was, that he was playing a serial killer, till it got released. So I guess that is, like, just their reaction to it. I'm sure they... I wonder what they thought when it was like, okay, in this scene, I'm in jail. Why are you in jail? I thought they were making a movie about your life. Don't worry about it. Just show up to the jail and talk to me.
I mean, it works for if they really are not actors, that makes a ton of sense to get pretty realistic performances. I'd recently saw Southland Tales, and the very beginning of that before the bomb goes off and it's just like kids playing and shit. That is honestly just kids playing. He gave the camera to his like nephews to run around and film shit. So it is kids just having a good time. But I feel like if you're directing these people, you'd be losing your mind trying to get them to authentically say what you want them to say. So, hey, mom and dad, it's just a documentary. Don't worry about it. Here's the jail scene, but you're not really in jail. It's not a documentary anymore.
In this scene, I've broken my neck. From what? It doesn't matter. I just have a broken neck. You just have to take care of me. Even that scene's weird, too. When he's in the hospital, he has that guy next to him, and he's like, did you shit your pants? The guy, the old guy's just like, yes, I shit my pants all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then the nurse comes in and she's like, oh my God, again? He's like, you know you love it. That's the only reason you come in here.
He's really good too when they're showing, more so in the beginning, he's kind of shy about the camera. And then as the movie progresses, he's not as shy. There's shots in the beginning where he can't look directly at the camera. Like, he keeps looking away. Like, he feels uncomfortable. But then later, he's just like, here, give me that camera. Hey, if you guys are running out of money or whatever, don't worry about it. I'll pitch in.
Yeah, and then they also have a very, very much like a Spinal Tap kind of thing where they keep, their sound man keeps getting killed. I think they go through like three different sound men through the film. they always keep getting shot, and he's just like, oh, yeah. Well, Patrick was a good guy, but, you know, I guess it happens. Guess we'll just have to move on.
Right, because those real abrupt cuts they have of them murdering people, and then there are three times, if not more, of them having a casual conversation where he's just bragging about something, and then they all just start getting shot at by, you have no fucking clue.
You get all your information about this character from, like, those little moments in between the murder. Like, the murders are just these like real fast flashes. There's real fat flashes. Like another moment that I love too is when they chase a guy into like a warehouse or like some type of factory or something like that. But then they all have to stop because he's like, hold on, what? I lost my bracelet. I'm like, what? He's like, my metal bracelet, it had my name on it. And they're like, oh, was that really important to you? He goes, yeah, there's not a lot of kids to steal that from, are there? Not a lot of kids with my name. Which again implies that at some point, yeah, even though he says like, I don't like killing kids, like he's definitely killed a kid just because he had his name on a bracelet and he wanted it.
And now he left his name at a potential crime scene.
Yeah, when he has the entire film crew, and they're still chasing that guy, like, they still haven't established that guy is somewhere in this factory with a gun, and he wants to kill them as well, and they're all just, like, galling around. He's just like, did you find it? No. What's that shiny thing by your foot? You gotta look at that. What is that?
And the other film crew, that's great, too.
Yeah, when they just run into those other guys. Oh, you guys got some nice equipment. What's this? Oh, that's video. What are we doing? Film? And he just like throws the camera on the
film's car. Better. Yes, it is. Film's better.
Yeah, I just love when he just drops it. Yeah. What are we shooting on? Film? Okay. Oh God.
He's one of the directors, because there's three directors in this, and I'm assuming it's pretty much everybody you see that's the film crew.
It's him, the guy Remy, that's the producer that he talks to most, and then the other guy you don't see is the guy that's holding the camera.
The cameraman.
Because he is the cinematographer, yeah, and he's the other director. Yeah. I had to look up because I was wondering if any of these guys did anything, which pretty much just the main guy, Ben, who's the actor, he's the only one. He's still making films in France and Belgium today. The one that's the cinematographer killed himself, and the other guy, Remy, like, never did anything else, so I don't know why. It's weird. I don't know if just this movie if it had a bad impact on him, or because of all the controversy that it had for being too graphic, that the other guys never really did anything.
I mean, that could potentially hurt them, but I don't know. I feel like if it's at Cannes, you have a lot of people, at least from a different countries, that are enjoying that, and maybe somebody would back a project. Or maybe they don't trust you with anything more cinematic because they've probably thought you were playing around and maybe got lucky cutting it together and it being so interesting. It's hard to judge when you only see the one movie. And like you said, we haven't seen anything else from that guy, the main guy, right? You said he's still making movies, but have you heard of any of them? Have you seen them?
No. They're all French. They're all French. Do we look like we watch French films? Come on.
We have, and we will again.
Yeah, I guess he mostly is doing comedies, which that's my one thought, is that comedies don't always transfer over. Like, we don't, like, if we get films from a lot of foreign countries, yeah, it's always the same ones you're thinking of from, like, that you'll see at the Academy Awards. They're all the very serious dramas. Like, we don't get a lot of the comedies from these.
Yeah, you're fucking right. Well, they don't respect our comedies in the award seasons. But yeah, that would be great to have. Yeah, you're right. This is a very poor vagrant that just goes around and starves to death, and that's our country's movie. And you don't get something like, this is about a serial killer, and it's kind of funny.
Yeah. Yeah, they only go for the most serious serious films at the Academy Awards. The ones that'll really bring you down. Like the big one this year for foreign film is Zone of Interest, which is I've heard is like one of the most depressing films to watch, because it's all about concentration camps and that being like super miserable. And
I did see it, and it's a rough movie because the concept of it, it's probably the most artsy film nominated this year for Best Picture. The idea is these people go along living their normal-ass lives while they're right outside of Auschwitz concentration camp, and you can, like, hear people getting shot, it's smoking, and they can't take the smell of the bodies. It doesn't show anything inside the concentration camp, but these people, they just keep ignoring it and living their lives. Like, they're actually, the husband of the family is stationed there. They all know what's happening. It is so terrible just by the fact that they're not concerned remotely about those people. Well, there's some characters that are, but the main family is not concerned at all. They're more concerned about getting a promotion or a demotion. And it's out there too, because this guy, his name is Jonathan Glazer. Is that how you say his name? The only other movie of his I watched, and there are some more on the Criterion channel, so I'll probably check them out. I haven't seen Sexy Beast or Birth, but I did see Under the Skin. And if you've seen that movie, yeah, it's...
I never did. Like, I know what it is, but, like, I never sat down and watched it.
It's really hard to explain. He feels a lot like bits and pieces of Stanley Kubrick from 2001. The beginning of Zone of Interest is literally just black, and you're just hearing the sound, just sounds, no music or anything. But then it goes into crazy ass shit where things would like turn fucking red, or there's night sequences, and the night sequences are always shot like with a film negative, so they look like everyone's white and glowing. It's really fucking weird. Japan's thing this year is the Wim Wenders movie that just is like a guy in Japan that has a hard
super
life.
Average guy that just has an incredibly average life.
And I'm sure there's more to it that has blown people's minds. But yeah, it always surprises me what they pick from these countries. It's always...
I mean, hey, we at least got Godzilla nominated for some sort of Academy Award. It didn't get...
visual effects, but the director also did the visual effects on it, and they did it with less money and less people, and it looks way better than most things. So
it looks way better than a lot of the stuff that's being cranked.
Hopefully it's got something going for it, at least.
Yeah.
They were all proud of it, too. Like, I thought it would be maybe foreign, or maybe it could sneak in the Best Picture, because I do think it's worthy to be there.
Yeah.
But them to be like, visual effects? Fuck yeah. Godzilla's never been nominated at all for an Academy Award. This is big news.
Yeah.
I do think they did a good job of touching on the generic information that we've all come to know about killers, where it feels like more of a comedy. We got the year before Silence of the Lambs. You got this highly intelligent killer, and this is like the dumb version of it. And I mean, I didn't even know what world he was kind of in, where, I mean, obviously I took the murders as a crime, that it was taking place in our world, but he's so blatant about what he's doing. I don't know if we're in some, yeah, supposed to be in some other dimension or some shit.
A lot of the people that he talks to, like you were saying, he pretty much like openly talks about killings, like while he's at the bar.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they talk to the woman that like used to be a model, but now she's just kind of like a lonely middle-aged woman living by herself. I think they ask like, "Oh, you know what he does for work, right?" And she's like, "Yeah, sure." Like, she doesn't get into the details, but she knows that's what he does, because he references something about, yeah, there was a guy that said she couldn't be in the, like, couldn't be doing something, or couldn't be at the club or something. He's like, let's just say that guy's not around anymore. And like his friend that's the musician that he went to school with or something, I think they also ask her like, well, you know what Ben does for a living, right? And she's like, yeah, I mean, I know he does, I know some of the stuff that he does. He's just such a weird, weird guy. I also thought of Bill Maher when I looked at him. Like, he looks like the Belgian Bill Maher. He has that same look to him. But yeah, he thinks he's like the coolest guy. Definitely doesn't think that any of his actions will have consequences. Even at the end when he starts...
I mean, they don't for so long. I kind of get him feeling that way.
When he starts getting the movie really does take a turn. It really is at the... when he gets punched, it's almost like him getting knocked out in the boxing ring, like, brings everything, like, to a screeching halt, and he just can't do anything. He can't seem to figure anything out. He's not able to... his thing about like knocking out mailmen and stealing their uniforms to get into people's houses. He tries to like get that guy and take him down, but he's so bumbling that he can't do anything. And then he blames the camera guys, like, "Wow, you guys just weren't gonna back me up there. You're just gonna let me fail."
I thought the story arc took a little bit to get into, but I thought it was, he's pretty much the same character from beginning to the end, but you do kind of start getting to see the film crew. They start becoming more involved. They were all kind of becoming killers, and I thought it was going in that direction where like something would happen to him and they were just going to continue their killing sprees. The only thing that I didn't find funny though, Chuck, was the weird gang rape scene that they had with that husband and wife. They had him at a knife to his throat, and then they cut her all open and stuff. I'm like, what the fuck? Like,
yeah.
That was like the one thing that made me think of it was just trying to be extreme and offend or something. I wasn't offended as much as I thought this is a comedy, and then I got to that scene where I'm like, okay, I don't even know what this is.
After that, that's when we start to get more of some of the other weird stuff, like the everyone's getting packages in the mail of animals with like sticks impaled through them.
Mm-hmm. The like, rats, oh. And shit.
And he's like, I think that's that Italian guy that I killed a couple weeks ago. And they're like, so what's this a sign of? Oh, it's a sign that his family's gonna...
oh yeah, like his brother or something is like after him.
And he's like, yeah, I don't think it's serious though. Those guys are jokes. They're not serious. which definitely turns out to not be correct, since they murder everybody around him before finally killing him and the film crew, which does lead to like, yeah, we get that other weird scene of where he goes to the musician friend's apartment and she has the flute in her ass, and then when he goes to like his parents' house and he's like, they're like, is everything okay in there? And he was like, Well, my mom wasn't a musician. Is that what you're asking?
They put this broom in her.
Yeah, they used the broom.
And it reminded me a lot of Henry, actually. But if Henry was funny.
More intentionally funny.
Henry did have that really good funny scene when they went to the black market guy that was selling them the camcorder and shit. That was extremely funny.
That would be in this film, like them going to get a new camera after one of theirs breaks and being like, which one do we want? We want the good one, right? Like, we want the one that shoots on film, not video.
Yeah, and it does. It has a lot of really good documentary type moments too, like that woman that was like the model or at the club or whatever the hell she was. And they throw the keys down and he can't open. It's like three tries at trying to figure out what key opens the door.
Yeah, him trying that. I also love the moment too when they're like, he sneaks up and kills the guy on the job site.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, he has like the most offensive things imaginable. He's like, ugh, the poor guy, he was black. That's not fair. I could barely see him in this light. I can't believe they'd do something to me like that. And he just has like those, like he's constantly making like weird things. And he's like
talking about the Arab guys he buried. And
yeah. And then he's like, oh, you know what? This is a good time. We can see if it's true what they say. Hey, take his pants off. And he's just like, whoa, man. I don't know how he walks around with that thing. It's like so awkward that he's like, okay, well, he can put his pants back on and go bury him. He's like, I'm not touching that thing. I think he might have something.
That's probably like the first moment that the crew starts becoming involved because the crew gets that guy out of there. Oh, I was thinking too, I just thought of it now with Tarantino, love this movie. I wonder if he took the moment from this film and put it into Inglourious Bastards where they're finding the money under the bed. And he's just like, bingo.
Oh, yeah.
Bingo. That's a bingo. Like that's what I was thinking.
Probably. Yeah. I feel like there's a lot of stuff in this movie that feels like, it just fits perfectly in with Tarantino's mind.
And we keep bringing him up because when we did Extends, we were talking about Jennifer Jason Leigh's feet.
Yeah. That's where
how she had to have got Hateful Eight had to have.
I could 100% see another moment that's in this that feels, again, it almost feels like the moment in Pulp Fiction when he's playing around with the gun and he shoots that guy that's when they're all at his birthday party and he's like he does it on purpose, like it's obviously not an accident, but it feels very much the same way of like shooting Marvin, like he's just like, they buy him that holster and he's like, ah, that's cool, man. Give me my revolver. And then he's like practicing his draw and that guy's like laughing and making too much noise and he's like annoying him. And he keeps doing it and the camera keeps like whipping back and forth, showing him pull the gun out over and over until finally he shoots it and kills that guy. And then the other two women are just sitting there with blood splattered all over them and everyone just has to like pretend that it's normal and just keep moving on with the dinner. But that was 100% made me think of John Travolta with Pulp Fiction, like hey man, just like playing around with a gun, just it goes off and blood goes everywhere.
There's so many scenes. It felt like scene after scene was really well thought out. You made me think of the other dinner scene where they went to go get mussels to celebrate.
Oh yeah.
He's like, I could really go for some mussels. And the first thing he does, that waiter comes over and he's like, dude, you got to start taking care of your face. Because he's all broken out with, like, acne and shit. But then he just starts vomiting. And he's like, they must have been bad muscles. And the rest of the film crew is saying, nah, I they were fine with me. I don't know what happened.
The scene before, I thought you were even going to bring up the scene before that, which I love of when he brings that up. Like, man, I could sure go for some muscles and french fries. Mm-hmm. Like, and everyone, Andre's got something that he's doing later, and he's like, oh, well, I mean, you can cancel your plans. Like, come on, man, we gotta go out and celebrate. And
we don't want to offend the serial killer.
Like, yeah, they're like, well, I think we had, like, other things. Maybe we'll do it next time. And he's just like, yeah, sure, I guess I'll just go, like, not have muscles by myself or something. He's just walking off, and then he, like, keeps looking over his shoulder, like, are they gonna mm-hmm. apologize to me and come... And then it just immediately cuts to them all in the restaurant. They all change their mind.
Well, when that first sound guy dies too, it's really funny where the producer Remy gets upset and he starts kicking him, kicking his body, like, why'd this have to happen? And the killer says, you have to calm down. It's like a slippery slope. Like, 1 minute you're kicking him, and the next minute you're going to be, like, shooting people.
Yeah. Like, he's like, this is how you'll turn into someone like me. He's like, you don't want to do that. Come on.
Yeah, I guess the thing I was most surprised with what we were picking, because I felt like, even though we mentioned it in the beginning of the show, Blair Witch Project, Cloverfield, technically what I picked, and your next movie, they're all horror. They really fall into the horror genre. And I mean, I know there's killings and it's disturbing, but this does feel more comedy, and I can't think of, like, a found footage comedy movie, really.
No, not that I can really think of. Yeah, it's definitely it's weird that the genre is, it just doesn't lend itself to other types. Like, not saying that it's impossible, I'm sure someone could make a great, well, I guess maybe you'd say Project X. That's kind of how that was built. Is,
yeah,
it's kind of like, you know, it's supposed to be that those kids wake up the next morning and they're like, I don't remember anything that happened. Like, let's watch the camera, and, you know, they see everything that they did. So I guess that's maybe the only other attempt at doing something in a similar way of, like, a documentary style found footage that is a comedy. I guess that's always the hard thing about the premise. Like, when you're trying to sell it as, oh, they found footage, you know, a romantic comedy doesn't fall into that, because it's like, well, what the hell would there be, like, lost footage of
what happened to the people?
Yeah. In the end, that has to be the assumption, is that the reason you're finding footage is because the person's dead. So it almost immediately has to go to some sort of horror type scenario film, or, you know, leaning more into sci-fi with something like Cloverfield. But yeah, that's I guess the entire reason of why it goes there. If you found the footage, it's because the person's dead.
Or it'd be very hard to make satisfying if they're alive. Like, what would the romance be? They accidentally dropped their GoPro into the ocean.
Yeah.
They didn't fall off. Just the camera. They just lost that camera.
It was one of those things, though. Like, when found footage did start blowing up, and, like, Paranormal Activity really was the big one, but...
I mean, it grew Blumhouse, and I got a lot of Blumhouse movies I like, so I can't be upset with the franchise.
There was a lot there where it was just every other week was something else, found footage. And I don't, it is something that I would say it's hard to do well. I think it's very easy to just, you know, basically just put a camera, what was that one, Diary of the Dead, the Romero one, that's basically just, hey, look at, you know, zombie movies, and this guy recorded it with a camera. Like, he did nothing, there was nothing original to the idea. It was just the idea of, hey, zombie apocalypse, but a guy filmed it.
It would have been better if he was still around and he made it later, and it could be more maybe the Generation Z TikTok generation or something. But the camcorder just, yeah, there wasn't any substance to that movie. Maybe he did have a good social commentary, but the cast sucked. I don't know. Romero, to me, is kind of hit and miss. I don't think he's the best director, but he's made some of the best movies out there. But not all of his movies are good. I don't, you know.
Yeah. There's been some other good ones, though. Another one that's not necessarily a... I guess it does get a little horror, would be, like, Chronicle. I think Chronicle's still a good movie.
Mm-hmm. I wasn't thinking about that. That's, like, strong superhero, but it is kind of horror by the end of the third act of that movie.
We kind of get it for a little bit of District 9, but then it switches to a regular movie after the first 20 minutes, half hour, when it switches over. So we get a little bit of found footage out of something like that.
I'm actually kind of surprised that they didn't do more of... I like the idea that what District 9 did, where they had, like, news stories intertwined in it, too. And it makes me think of Stephen King's Carrie, which is written from the perspective of, like, news articles and interviews. And I feel like if you're making that into a movie, documentary, you could probably do the found footage aspect mixed in with what was going on the news and stuff, where other people, you could get footage that way, or have interviews on top of the, you know, on top of the fact of, like, maybe the found footage, these people are missing, but you're still talking to, like, parents in the real time or something, or in the present time, I mean to say. But yeah, that was great. I'm glad that you picked it. It is not what I was expecting at all, and I enjoyed it. That's usually how I work, though, and you know that.
Yeah, like I said, I tried to go with something a little different, not just the standard found footage.
Well, you found the unique one.
I did find it. That is true. Someone had to find it.
Did you watch next week's movie already, or is that going to be new to you? Lake Mungo.
Yes, I've seen that one.
Okay.
I have to remember. I was like,
I knew you forgot. Your brain's just like shot from being at work all day.
Well,
yeah.
The next two movies are a lot closer in release time than this one was. Like, I 100% knew that this one was the first one, but the other two, I was like, did Lake Mungo come out before the other one?
Yeah.
Like, can't remember. They're both in the 2000s.
We'll get into the details, but I watched that for the first time only a couple years ago, and not when it was a part of the 8 films to die for, or whatever the fuck series it was.
I know. I was like, that was probably in Hollywood Video, and I never, like, we had all those movies all the time, and I was like,
we did. We had every single one of them.
Like, and I never watched any of them until I finally saw this one, because I saw it was, other people were like, yeah, this for being one of these cheap, like, movies in the series, like, it's actually pretty good.
Yeah, and I had like a nice Second Sight edition. It's got real sweet, and they're like, yeah, that would have been $3.99 at Hollywood Video back in the day.
Yeah.
They were like throwing them away, like throwing it in the trash.
We can't get rid of these things fast enough.
Yeah, it would definitely be the movies that we would recommend, like, not recommend. What do you think about these? I don't know. People bitch and say they're terrible, so I don't really know.
I feel like that's the one that you'd see, like, every Halloween. People would be like, ah, man, I've seen everything else. I guess I'll watch these ones.
Yeah. I saw Transmorphers a few times. I'm going to try this Lake Mungo. And if you like Transmorphers, you're probably not going to like Lake Mungo. Like, I don't think that you're the same audience at all. Actually, I wouldn't be surprised if I would love to go back in time and ask our customers that were at Hollywood Video that were watching all of these movies. I bet you they like Lake Mungo the least.
I would 100% say the exact same thing, yeah.
that's what I feel.
A lot of people, I didn't get it. What was happening?
It was so slow. I had to think.
I mean... The other films that came out at the same time as that, one of them is called ZMD, Zombies of Mass Destruction, so I'm sure that was the one everyone really wanted to watch.
I'm sure it was. I kind of want to watch it, to be honest.
Yeah. Now that you heard that title, you're like, oh, that actually does sound pretty good.
You know, once Arrow releases it, I guess I'll have to see it.
Yeah.
That's the only way to go about it. But yeah, good pick. Definitely seek it out. It is misleading. Looking at the cover, I thought it was like a noir or something. It's just a guy like firing a gun. Yeah, I had no idea. I didn't even read the description. So thank you, Chuck. Thanks for the introduction. That was a good one.
Yeah.
And like we said, Lake Mungo, Chuck's second pick as we get through found footage. Between this episode and that episode, though, we will have our usual Academy Awards episode. I'll have some friends on if everything goes smoothly and everybody doesn't jump ship. That happens sometimes. We'll figure out how good my friends are. I don't know if Chuck's even wants to be involved with that, but that'll be like a Tuesday. That'll come out Tuesday. So Exciting times. Yep, pretty exciting. And we're always releasing these things. We're pretty far ahead of our schedule recording this one, but that's fine. I'm actually really kind of excited to see the Coen movie I worked on, Drive Away Dolls. It's positive, but it sounds kind of abrasive with some people. And I heard that the comedy in it was good and not like, what was that one? Intolerable Cruelty or whatever. Maybe The Lady Killers, but I don't mind The Lady Killers that much. I'll agree it's not their best, but I don't think The Lady Killers is bad, or else I'm just, I don't know. I have a low bar humor. I'm just okay with it.
The Lady Killers is such a weird movie because there's so much of that movie that I haven't watched it in probably 10, 15 years.
But you still think about it?
I still think about it. There's such weird stuff. I think, like, the part I always think about is J.K. Simmons in that movie, because he's just constantly telling people how he has IBS and, like, what that's about. And, like, Marlon Wayne's being like, I don't want to hear about what you're doing all the time. He's like, hey, man, IBS is a really serious problem. You, it affects a lot of people.
You sound like J.K. Simmons.
I don't know why that one part always sticks with me when he's just constantly being like, I got IBS. It's a problem. Let me tell you about it.
Yeah, I'm excited about that. And next week, the week after that, the weeks before this episode came out, Dune. I'm excited to see the second part of Dune.
Yeah.
I'm rereading the book, and then I'm going to just go through and read Messiah and Children of Dune since I haven't read them yet. And then I'll probably stop there. I don't know if it's worth going any further. Did you read beyond the first book?
I've read it all.
You've read all six or beyond the six?
There's like eight total.
I think the Frank Herbert ones are six.
He wrote six, yeah. And there's two or three more that was...
There are like 30 of them now.
Yeah, I haven't gotten into like all the... I've read the entire main story. I haven't read all the prequels and side things.
I have no idea what I'm getting into, but I do like the refresh for what's going on, and it doesn't really matter, because if they do make Messiah, which it sounds like they fucking will, and it's going to be in a few, like, it sounds like it's going to be at least 3-4 years away, because Denis Villeneuve wants to do something else between those movies. But yeah, I'm just excited to see how it turns out. Everybody's like, it's a masterpiece, and I'm like, I'm sure it probably is, just based off of all the other movies I've seen of Villeneuve. And then I don't really know. We do have some good movies that are coming out this year in general, but they're going to be so spread out. And there's two more strikes that are potential to come up this year. IOTC and the Teamsters. So I don't know. Maybe we'll never have movies again. Yeah. They'll be like, we can't release Mickey 7 yet. Or they're calling it Mickey 17, I think. But the new Bong Joon-ho movie with Robert Pattinson, it sounds like it's finished, but WB doesn't have the money to release it theatrically unless Joker does well or some shit like that. So it doesn't sound too good for
that money from canceling Batgirl and the Wile E. Coyote movie and everything else they just canceled. Like, I thought that's what they were saving all that money for.
Somebody said when they can these movies for the insurance, they should become instantly public domain or something, or at least free. I 100% agree. Like, throw that shit up on YouTube or something. Give it to the people like we do, Chuck. That's what we do every week on this podcast. And I'm going to shut the fuck up now. Let you guys go on with the rest of your day, and we'll be back next week with two, the Academy Awards and Lake Mungo. Stay tuned.
We are Cinema D'Amore. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter to stay up to date with news and information on upcoming episodes. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Podbean, Spotify, Amazon Music, Audible, Pandora, Alexa, or iHeartRadio. It would be greatly appreciated if you subscribe to our podcast on your platform of choice. We also appreciate feedback, so rate us, review us, and let us know what you think. And above all else, thank you for listening.